Good morning. What a good morning it is, right? Trees have exploded into bloom, green grass everywhere, birds, animals, tourists. I mean, it is a beautiful day out there today. It feels like we wait and wait for months for spring to finally get here, and then all of a sudden, here it is. Thanks be to God. So in our gospel reading today from the Gospel of John, there's some things that we might miss in that short little passage, unless we maybe have studied up on it a little bit or have heard it preached about before. And so I'd like to start by putting it into context. John's gospel is very different than the other three gospels that we have, the ones that we call the synoptic gospels, which is Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all tell this basically the same story of Jesus, his life, crucifixion, resurrection, with some very different details, some important details, some trivial details, among those three synoptic gospels. And then John is a very different gospel than the other three. And I kind of love the fact that we have four different tellings of the story of Jesus's life. I mean, it makes me think about the fact that there are many ways we can tell our own stories, the stories of our own lives. There are many ways that other people tell our stories for us also. So that's just a little aside, I guess. But in John's gospel, Jesus is, you know, I've often referred to him as a renegade rabbi out there telling hard truths to systems of power, in particular the Jewish and Roman power that he lived within in those days. But it's also important in John's gospel, it's very important that Jesus is an observant Jew. He is embedded in his religion. In John's gospel, depending on how you count them and how you read them, there's at least four times, possibly five times, that Jesus comes to Jerusalem for other reasons than to be crucified. Mm-hmm. In the synoptic gospels, he only comes once. He comes at the end of his life. But in John's gospel, Jesus keeps returning and returning to Jerusalem for feast days, for festival days. Maybe he was a Christmas and Easter guy. I don't know for sure. But there were neither of those things. But you get what I mean. He was definitely there for some of the big celebrations. Our story today tells us that Jesus came for a festival of the Jews. He came to Jerusalem. And he entered through the Sheep Gate. Jerusalem was a walled city, and there were five gates that you could enter the city through. Jesus chose to come in through the Sheep Gate, and the Sheep Gate was where the shepherds brought the lambs that were going to be sacrificed on the altar for atonement for sins, for the Jewish rituals. So there's an interesting little foreshadowing, I think, of Jesus's entry into Jerusalem this time, and this is not the time that he was crucified. He enters in through the Sheep's Gate, and he goes to the pool at Bethzatha. Five porticos. Number five keeps recurring here. But anyway, five porticos at the pool at Bethzatha. And Bethzatha was an interesting place. It was a pool where sick people came to be cured. They're waiting for a miracle, right? And here is something that isn't written into the gospel. But the way Bethsaida was supposed to work was every once in a while, maybe periodically or maybe at random, an angel would come to Bethsaida and stir the waters in the pool. So they either got turbulent or they just started moving around, and the first person into that pool would be healed. Doesn't seem quite fair, but that was the tradition, the myth, the rumor, or perhaps it happened. I won't write off that possibility. So I can see all these people gathered around the pool, kind of waiting. Maybe the elbows are coming out, right? For that water to be stirred up so that they could be the first person in the pool. Jesus comes to the pool at Bethsaida. And now what we got to remember is Bethsaida was not a spa. It wasn't Astoria Hot Springs. It wasn't a place where well people came to relax and kick back and feel the healing waters. It was a place that was filled with sick people. Some people, like the man in today's story, had been sick 38 years, and assuming the life expectancy of that time, he'd probably been sick his whole life. And he is sitting there on a mat, apparently, and Jesus shows up. Now, remember, because this is a place where sick people gather, this is not a place that Jesus is supposed to be. Not if he wants to be ritually clean when the festival starts. This is a place where Jesus is, well, it's extraordinary that Jesus comes to this place among all these sick people. And it's funny because Jesus, he always seems to show up when the time is right, doesn't he? Or maybe the time is always right when Jesus shows up. But anyway, Jesus shows up this day before the festival, and according to our story, he walks straight up to the sick man and asks him a really interesting and kind of strange question. Do you want to be made well? I wonder if what I would have said if I'd have been in that sick man's position in that moment. I mean, I'd like to think, of course I want to be made well. I've been sick 38 years. What do you think I'm doing here? But that's not what the sick man says. He doesn't really respond to Jesus' question at all. He kind of evades it. He kind of rationalizes and justifies why he has remained sick for 38 years, or maybe just that day. And he says, you know, when the waters are stirred, I don't have anybody to pick me up and put me in the water. So somebody always gets there first. Jesus doesn't say, oh, you poor thing. Let me sit here with you for a while and see if the waters are stirred up. And if they are, I'll get you in there. Jesus doesn't say that. Jesus says, take up your mat and walk. Interesting, right? Do you want to be made well? Well, yeah, I can't. Nobody is helping me. I can't get there by myself. Do you want to be made well? Do I want to be made well? how many rationalizations and justifications do I have that get in the way of my health and well-being? Anybody who has ever either struggled with addiction or loved someone who struggled with addiction knows this all too well. Yeah, I want to get well. My life is miserable. And yet, I keep doing the same thing I've always done. Darling, you've got a problem. Do you want to be made well? Well, yeah, but I want to heal you. I want to make you well. I want so badly to heal you. I can't heal anybody, and neither can you. Well, maybe if you're a doctor, but I have a sense that even doctors are working alongside people rather than performing some miracle within them. They're standing alongside people and helping in any way that they can. So what lesson do we take from this story today? Jackson Hole, Wyoming, 2025. For me, I hear just a real honest accounting of what the human condition can be like. Three beats to the story. We hear a question. Do you want to be made well? Second beat of the story, resistance. Yeah, but. And then the third beat of the story is participating in our own healing. Jesus didn't pick him up and put him in the pool. He didn't pick him up and send him on his way. He gave him assurance. He gave him reassurance. He gave him hope. He kind of gave him a directive. So we need to listen for that too. I was thinking about how to preach on this story of healing for this Sunday. And I wasn't really quite able to find my way into it. And then I went on an event that was organized by the Diocese of Wyoming early in the week. It was a pilgrimage to the Wind River Reservation. And it was both a beautiful and terrible and hopeful and despairing pilgrimage. And here's what I want to say about it. I've never encountered a group of people that longed for their own healing any more strongly than the people on that reservation, both tribes. And I should say that these are the only people that I've had personal experience with. I know that there are many groups of people who are in serious need of healing. But I do have some personal experience over there. Mary and I have been going over for 6 or 7 years now. It started off with a friend of mine, Roxanne Friday, who many of you have probably heard preach. We've invited her here before. She served at the Chapel of the Transfiguration for a month, a couple summers ago. But anyway, she's a Native American woman who is also an Episcopal priest serving on the Wind River Reservation. She serves two churches over there. She and I went through school together, and she became a very dear friend of mine. And knowing that Roxanne does a couple hundred funerals a year, Mary and I asked her, can we come over and help in some way? You know, can we give you a Sunday off, is really what it amounted to. And she was like, yeah, please. So that's how Mary and I got really involved over there. Mary got involved in a slightly different way, but that was my main connection. And so Roxanne, if you've ever heard her preach, what she always talks about is how important, how vital healing is, individually and as a people. And Roxanne doesn't feel like we can heal until they can heal. And I believe that. I mean, none of us were pioneers building the railroad, displacing Native Americans off their lands, but our church was complicit. A fellow named John Roberts, he was an Episcopal priest, showed up over there in about 1883, which is very shortly after the reservation was formed. And John Roberts did some amazing stuff. He started a girls' school at what is now St. David's on the Fort Washakie side of the reservation. And in that school, the girls were encouraged to keep speaking their own language, eat a native diet, keep their culture alive. Because he had this school for girls, he thought it would be a great idea to start a school for boys, right? Makes perfect sense. So he started one a little bit further down the road at what is now the town of Fort Washakie, where the Fort Washakie Public School is. He started a school there which was called the Wind River Industrial School, and it was a school for boys. Now, in order to get the funding that he needed in order to operate this school, he went to the federal government, and the federal government had some guidelines of what needed to happen at the school to get federal funding. First thing that happened was kids were taken there, often against their will, often against their parents' will, and put into this school, cut their hair, banned from speaking their language, and, you know, I mean, we do so many things with the best of intentions that go so wrong. 25 kids that they know of died there at that boarding school. Some of these kids could see their house from the school and were forbidden to ever go home. I mean, many of them ran away and hid. I believe that a couple of them were found frozen to death. But anyway, 25 precious children died under that boarding school's care and were buried in a small plot of ground. I'd say it's maybe smaller than this church, the room that we're in right now. Unmarked graves. The tribe has built a chain link fence around it, but there are no gravestones and no markers. And as for part of the pilgrimage, Roxanne went out and bought 26 vases with beautiful flowers in them. And before we got there, she placed these 26 vases around the cemetery. 25 for the one who the children are known, the 26th for any other children that might have been lost there. And as part of this pilgrimage, the Diocese of Wyoming passed some resolutions a year ago about how we can try to stand alongside of our brothers and sisters on the reservation who have been helped and hurt by the church. And so as part of the, and the pilgrimage was organized at the diocesan level, and as part of the pilgrimage, one of our stops on Monday was at the cemetery. And there was a Northern Arapaho drum group and an elder, spiritual leader, who prayed over these graves and sang the farewell song. And there was a Shoshone drum group and an elder who prayed in Shoshone. And then there was a plaque that was placed by the Diocese of Wyoming. And I'm just going to read you what's on that plaque. Here marks the cemetery site for the Wind River Industrial School, 1884 to 1940. A boarding school for Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho children, founded by Episcopal missionary John Roberts. We grieve the loss of at least 25 indigenous children laid to rest here from the following families: Bishop, Grosbeck, Nocock, Piahora, Rigi, Tabanaquash, Tinzone, Ute, Washakie, Weed, Whitehorse, and Wynn, among others. The Episcopal Church in Wyoming acknowledges our role in perpetuating the violence, ethnocide, and other systems of oppression through the operation of indigenous boarding schools on the Wind River Indian Reservation. We commit to truth-telling about these atrocities and the resulting intergenerational trauma. We repent of the brutal methods used to strip indigenous peoples of language, cultural identity, and human dignity. Further, we seek healing with our indigenous relatives, dedicated May 19th, 2025. So, what I keep hearing when I go over there is not anger, is not bitterness, which blows my mind, frankly, because I believe I would be both angry and bitter if I had grown up within that system. But what I hear is a longing to be made well, a longing for healing. And it just breaks my heart. And you know what breaks my heart is I don't know what I can do to help. Look, I'm a white guy. I want to fix things, right? I love fixing things. But there's no fixing it. We cannot heal them. But we can stand beside them in their healing process. We can wait, and it's hard waiting. There was a woman there presenting. Her name is Sarah Augustine. Brilliant woman. She wrote a book called The Land Is Not Empty. I highly recommend it. I think we'll do a book study on that book this summer. But anyway, Sarah said this is going to be a long process, this healing process. And somebody asked her, well, how long do you think? She said, at least 100 years. So nobody in this room is going to see this all the way through. I mean, I maybe got 25 left. I don't know. But that's, who knows, right? But that's a good start, right? So I guess, I felt the responsibility to come back and talk to you all about this today. I don't have any easy answers. I don't even have any hard answers. But I know that this process, however it plays out, begins with listening. It begins with us being willing to not say, well, no, 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 that'll never work. Or not say, here's what I think you all ought to do. But to hear directly from the leadership and the people of the tribes, here's what you can do to help. I'm going to wrap this up. I've gone on a long time, but I remember so clearly asking Roxanne a couple years into this. I said, Roxanne, you know, I am here to help you in any way I can. Tell me what to do. And she just smiled. And she just said, when the time is right, you will be asked. Maybe the time isn't quite right yet. What we can do as a church full of mostly white people is to educate ourselves, to hear the truth, to learn the truth and to internalize the truth. And Mary and I, Mary is being voluntold here. She's not here today. I first heard that term this weekend. You've been voluntold. Here's what you're going to do. Mary and I are going to, we'll have a coffee hour coming up soon or an adult formation to tell you more about our experience on the reservation, about the pilgrimage. We will get involved with some groups that are working on the diocesan and on the national level, run by Native American people. And we're going to bring this to you all to do with it what you will. Amen.